And our special guest, Glenn Kimball. We're going to take your phone calls with Glenn and continue chatting with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Glenn, you've studied the pyramids, you've studied the Sphinx as much as anybody. What do you think of Edgar Cayce's claims that there's something at the base of the Sphinx? Zahi tells me that's ridiculous.
Well, you know, I've had to go from one end of my mouth with my tongue to the other end of my mouth with my tongue when it came to Edgar Cayce. There's many, we all have the ability to access that other world. But I think Zahi, I would take Zahi Hawass over Edgar Cayce at this point.
You would.
I've stood there in front of the Sphinx for hours trying to figure out how that could possibly be what Edgar Cayce said. And it just didn't make sense. As a matter of fact, I stood in this one spot for so long that I began looking at my shoes, and lo and behold, there was this red thing by my shoes. And so I reached down and picked it up, and it was a piece of pottery, okay? Next thing I know, the pyramid police come over, and they have their arms around me, and they said, thank you very much, and don't do this anymore. And about 2 minutes later, I see another red thing there. I reach over and pick it up, and it's a whole pot, you know? These are things that were obviously, because of the thickness, something to do with the creators of that, those tombs there. But I know why archaeologists end up being pottery specialists, but I hate that. I don't know why archaeologists can't just read the book. I mean, we avoid books like the plague. We don't like to have people in history write to us. We're more skeptical of that than we are of their broken pots. And that just drives me nuts. There's so many books out there, and we talk about Edgar Cayce talking about a hall of records. There certainly was a hall of records. And it may very well have been in the Sphinx. I don't think it was in the paw. I feel like, more than anything, that there's a hall of records somewhere in the labyrinth of the pyramids between the big pyramid and the second pyramid, or maybe in the Ramesseum or in Karnak itself. You know, you go to Karnak, you build a home and you dig the foundation, you're going to find an artifact. It's just riddled with things there.
Okay, let's take a few calls. You ready, Glenn?
Yeah.
Let's go to Palm Springs, California, west of the Rockies. Charles, you're up with Glenn Kimball.
Yes, I'm glad to get through and wish you all the best, Glenn. This is a funny little story for you about what I refer to as the Great One and the miracles that can happen. And this happened 4 years ago here, that my computer had crashed. And for 2 days, I was on the phone from 8 in the morning till 10 at night to India, trying to get this computer to work. I was down to the second day, 10 o'clock at night, a black screen with a blinking cursor, exhausted from 2 days. So I'm laying in bed at 10 after 11 thinking, you know, Great One, I refer to the Great One, I don't pester you. I don't ask you for any favors. And I just whispered out loud, but would you just do a teeny little bitty miracle? I said, will you fix my computer? And the next morning I got up and booted up the computer, and it worked. I sat there stunned. I could not believe it. So 2 days went by, and I told two friends what happened. And the computer crashed. And the Great One said, don't tell people I fix computers. And I said, that's what I call outsourcing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the whole thing is, if you encourage people, just like I had called a long time ago, where the plants, you said to talk to the plants and caress the plants. I'm terrible with plants, with the plants out here. I did that, and they, 2 days later, they went from 5 flowers to 23 flowers. And the more you encourage, the more things bloom. And that's, and that, so that was, I just hope my computer will be okay tomorrow, that he won't get mad.
I love it. Thanks, Charles. There's a message there, Glenn, I guess, huh?
You bet. All of us have access to that if we want it. You can't sit around and say, I don't believe in you, and I don't, and I'm not really interested, but why don't you just provide one miracle and I'll believe?
Yep.
The answer is, screw you, you know? It ain't going to happen.
Let's go to Toronto, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ken, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you doing tonight?
Good.
Listen, you. I don't know if you remember, I spoke with you like less than a week ago. I was calling one evening when you had Dr. John Hall.
Yes.
Again. And I was telling him, just like Glenn there, I've had many miracles in front of my eyes. Jesus appeared before me. And for years, since 1997, I've been calling in and talking to you, George, and different guests and telling things, and I was curious of your guest, Glenn, if he's heard of Dr. John Hall and the website Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, and wondered if he might not be also a victim of that. The other side of it is I've been for years believing that since Jesus appeared before me, that I was also like a chosen person. I've had experiences that are unexplainable, like Glenn. And, anyway, I was just curious if he'd heard of Dr. John Hall.
All right, let's ask him. Have you heard of Dr. John Hall at all?
Well, this protocol of asking me, have you heard about my favorite buddy that I read his book? I mean, that almost never works for me. I know I normally don't, haven't read them in, at least for years. I don't know anything about
these visitations, Glenn, that people say that they've been visited from is something very spiritual.
Sure.
I guess you have to assume maybe this has happened to them.
Well, I'm certain that has happened to many of people. You know, I can think of hundreds and hundreds of people in my association that you would never have thought that maybe they'd have an experience, and do, you know, it, I don't know who picks it and why, I'm not the guy, you know, I'm not the, you know, unlike this caller's, thought that he was somehow chosen, I think I'm uniquely not chosen. I've always felt like I'm one of the crowd. It's a very typical thing for people to do. Is they get one of these things to happen to them, and the next thing you know, they've declared themselves king.
And then again, you get those people that see the image of Jesus on toast and try to sell it on eBay.
Yeah. Well, I've never, you know, I've seen the master, but, you know, there's 10,000 of them that have, and I can't imagine why the master would even want to fool with me.
This entity that showed you hell, at this point, do you think this was a good entity trying to just show you something, pass information on to you, or was there something wrong, something evil about this entity?
That's a great question. I asked myself that 100 times in the last couple of weeks. I don't know. There's many times that I have to answer that question.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple nights ago, one of these entities kicked my door down, you know. And this was not some little door, you know. They just kicked it down. And you know, your natural thought is that it must be some evil entity. And my thought was, well, maybe it's not, you know. Maybe it's my dad wanting to get my attention, you know. How do I know?
That's a good point. How do we know?
We tend to jump the labels so quickly. Me, I like to just observe and
go with the flow. Yep.
And by the way, if you leave yourself open like that, you tend to have more experiences. The moment you have labeled it and open up your store, that now you are the great one, and please come to me, I will answer all your prayers. That's probably when it stops.
Super. How you holding up? You holding up for more calls?
Yeah.
Doing okay? All right. Let's go to Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Randolph, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Randolph.
Have you actually stood between the paws of the Sphinx?
Between the paws? He has. Well, I haven't.
Well, I mean, I'm talking, so you saw the giant stela right in front of the chest of the Sphinx, then?
Yeah.
And so you saw the engravatures, characters in the green diorite. What is your estimation as to how those characters could have been put into that very hard stone? By chisel and hammer?
Well, first of all, it's not hard stone, it's sandstone.
Oh, really? I thought it was the basalt that was in front of the Sphinx.
No, I mean, the Sphinx has got erosion marks all over it from water.
Oh, it rained a long time ago down there, didn't it?
Yeah, and you know, you could take your own chisel out there and create a problem. This isn't granite or metamorphic rock. This is a sedimentary rock. And, you know, I can appreciate that, and I know that you want Edgar Casey to be right, and that you want the Hall of Records to be sitting there under his paw. I hope you are right. I don't think so, but I hope you are.
Glenn, of all the journeys you've taken, of all these journeys that you've been to many places, is there that one spot that still fascinates you the most?
Yeah.
Where would that be?
Well, it's in the Southwest. It's a place where we found boat anchor stones up in the mountains, and I kept thinking, what's going on here? And I was with a good cowboy friend of mine. He was one of the most original cowboys I could ever think of. We were sitting on the cliff looking out, he said, do you see where the Indians came down? And I couldn't see a darn thing. You know? But he could tell the pathway and the campsite, etc. He says, and by the way, you got your hand on one of their boxes. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, take the lid off and look in the box. I leaned over and picked it up, and lo and behold, I was hanging on to the lid of a stone box. And I lifted it up, and there were some things in there, obviously some food stuffs that had been there for centuries or something, you know. I mean, it's amazing how these people, some people just have the ability to see. And me, I couldn't see it worth, if it, my life depended on it. But I did see after he explained to me that this particular area had been an ocean port, and we know that the Dalai Lama has a media consultant in this particular area, and he comes to the Southwest and prays for his ancestors there.
Fascinating.
So, yeah. You know, that's interesting.
Sure. Let's go to Bonnie in Hot Springs, Arkansas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Bonnie, go ahead.
Hi, how are y'all doing tonight?
Good, Bonnie. Good.
I'm so happy to be on. And George, I haven't talked to you in a couple of years, but I'm just so happy to be on. I'd like to talk to you tonight about a near-death experience I had when I was a child. It happened when I was about four. I flipped over my little ring and just, you know, I drowned. My stepdad brought me back to life, and I feel like I've just been a lot more, I don't know, in tuned with things ever since then. Now as an adult, I feel like I'm a lot more just in tune, meeting people, and I read people a lot better than most people, and I feel a lot of energy. And I went with a friend of mine last week. She went to see a psychic for romantic reasons, and I was just there to follow along. And the psychic, you know, she couldn't read my friend because she said, you know, my energy was so strong, and that she thought that I was an ascending angel. And I just wondered if you guys had heard about that, and maybe he could explain a little to me, or what he thought about that.
Well, you're an expert on angels, Glenn.
Well, you know, these psychic fairs are rather common in the East. I've attended quite a few of them. Not me looking for them, but
observing.
I had a couple of professors who were fascinated with psychic fairs. And, you know, most of the time when you're out there and someone else is trying to read for you, you're really getting stuff secondhand and thirdhand, and even if they were real, which I don't think they are, it's bent, you know. That's the way I feel. If you want an answer to your prayer, go get on your knees and find out. I mean, you got the power inside of yourself. And don't let someone tell you what to do. Go out and do it yourself. It was my greatest experience of my life to go out in the desert and pray for myself for two days. None of you are privy to what I saw. And tough luck, too bad, so sad, I'd never tell you. You know, but I didn't feel special afterwards. I just felt lucky.
What is your take on the angelic realm, Glenn?
Well, there, angels are missing. They're
you still there? Whoop! We're gonna have to get him back. Go ahead, give him a call there, Tom, and we'll get him right back. Just when he was talking about angels, off he went. Let's go to our first time caller, Mike, Glendale, California. Let's see what you had on your mind, Glenn. Mike.
good evening, gentlemen.
We'll try to get him back.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Sure. Loud and clear.
Okay. Well, I think I just experienced a miracle. I got on your show. I've been trying to.
That is a miracle.
Actually, I've been on two shows today with some deep questions, and this is capping it off. And you were just talking about the angels, and that's going to pretty much go right to where I was going to. Have you heard, and forgive me if I'm being redundant, because I just turned the radio on, so I don't know if we're
okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
Anything about the end of the world, like the 2012 thing? There's actually a fellow that I listened to on radio that he's actually pinpointed what he believes is the date that, called the end of the world or whatever, Christ returning. And I've tried to dispute this guy, then I went and studied to go prove him wrong, and I couldn't do it, which was really interesting because he was pretty accurate in what he was saying. What's your take on that? I mean, I'm not necessarily saying the 2012 thing, but he actually believes just 15 months now. I believe it's the May 21st, 2011.
Well, you know what? Since the beginning of time, people have always theorized that we were in, the apocalypse, Armageddon, for their civilization. For me, and I just did a conference on 2012 last weekend, that's the date I want to see what happens, because I believe that it's going to be a celestial event. It is not going to be the end of the planet. Or, but something could happen. You know, we're not protected with our electrical grid. If we get a solar flare hit this way, and a big one called an X flare, it's going to shut things down. And, this society is incapable of existing without the use of computers and ATMs and everything else. It would be a mess. I'll be back in a moment. We'll do open lines unless we get a hold of Glenn Kimball. And then Joshua Warren joins us next hour with an incredible story. You might remember when he was given a tape recorder, but it wasn't a tape, it was a wire. And that's how they recorded things. Well, he's got one of those, and we're going to play back some of it in a moment. Well, next hour, Joshua P. Warren joins us with his paranormal moment, and we'll come back with your phone calls. We've got Glenn Kimball next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Glenn Kimball, and we're going to take your phone calls as well. Glenn, we were talking about angels, and the devil tried to jump in, huh?
Oh, what the heck?
But the lines are here. So the angelic realm, as we were saying.
Well, you know, we did a CD on Daniel and the Watchers.
Uh-huh.
That's terribly informative about one of the aspects of angels. For those of you who would like to pursue that particular idea, of who the watcher angels are. There's quite a variety of angels with different purposes and, and different responsibilities in the heavens. So it's very difficult for a person to say, well, I saw an angel, and that means that I've seen them all, because it's not likely you've seen them all.
I remember when I was first doing Coast to Coast, Glenn, 9 years ago, when I was just filling in, and producer Lisa said, hey, I've got a great guest for you tonight, Glenn Kimball. And I went, the singer?
Yep.
How many people always thought you were Glenn Campbell?
Well, they've called me that since I was in high school, but when I sing, the plants die. So.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Kansas City, Missouri. David, you're up with us. Hey, David, welcome.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I had a question for Glenn. Quite a while back, you guys had a speaker talking about a Russian scientist that does DNA work with a shiny infrared laser through a salamander into a frog embryo. And the DNA travels over the infrared laser, and the salamander has a frog and vice versa.
Who is it?
I can't remember the name of the Russian scientist.
We've got it sitting here in our notes, but
But the story's incredible.
Yeah, and laser lights. I mean, the thing that gets me most is when they take water and you stand an individual in front of water. And three different individuals in front of three fonts of water, and then you freeze all three of them. And the attitudes of the individuals affect the crystallization process, and your crystals that come out in the water are completely different.
Amazing.
Different patterns based on attitude.
I'll get his name in a second here, Glenn, and we'll check it out here. But he definitely is a Russian scientist. He's a biologist. It's PJOTR Gerjuftja.
Yeah, that's the guy.
That's as close as I'm going to get with my Russian pronunciation. That's him, though.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks for the call, David.
Very famous piece of literature.
Absolutely. Let's go to Doug, Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Welcome to the program, Doug. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much, sir, and very nice speaking with you, Glenn. I went through a kind of a strange program our government has, and basically they hypnotized me into like a Christ-like, and then I was in Israel, well, at right on the Sea of Galilee at the Synagogue of Christ, and I've come up with some really beautiful and amazing inventions through this, and, you know, in my opinion, they were more given to me from God and from Christ, and instead of anything good, I was basically, other people made millions of dollars off of these. And so they left me sick with a disease. And I wonder, would there be angelic intervention for me? Or do I have to, like, hope our government helps me? Or how can I get out of my position?
Can you answer that one, Glenn?
Well, I'm not a healer. I think you need to communicate with yourself, with your own maker. I hear about these kinds of programs from time to time. And boy, if there are those kind of programs running around there beyond me, I was never invited to the party. So I wouldn't be able to tell you what kind of a program would do that to you and then take you to Israel. And, you know, my brother-in-law was a federal marshal, and they were very strict and narrow with their assignments and their responsibilities. And to have trained some... one of the new recruits to do that much of a different thing. I don't know. It's you belong to the wrong fraternity. I don't know.
What's new in the world of ancient manuscripts, Glenn? Anything new?
Well, for me, there are. We've come up with a collection of 2-minute segments called The Lost Treasures from History, and those are going to be aired on sister stations in the future in conjunction with a very wonderful sponsor that we have. It's the NoInsuranceClub.com. We're seriously in the negotiation stages with them. These are guys that have really broken their neck to eliminate the advertising costs and those kinds of things.
Sure.
That make things cost a lot. And anything that does the people good is something I want to be involved with. And so we're going to be doing that in the future. But what's new in the world of ancient manuscripts? I find a new one every day, George. I don't know what. I mean, my son and I go through the books, and we have thousands of ancient texts. You know, the ones that have caused me the most interest in recent days is I looked for many years for the Gospel of John the Baptist, rather remote. Difficult manuscript to find. Jesus said that John the Baptist was the greatest prophet born of woman, and yet we don't know anything about the man. I mean, what he taught. Well, I got a hold of that particular document in its entirety, and I included it in the CD portfolio. It's something that's just wonderful for those who are interested in that kind of thing.
Do you think we're ever going to find the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, I don't think we are going to find it, not where it is. I can tell you where it is.
Ethiopia?
No, it can't be in Ethiopia. They took artifacts, when Menelik went back to his mother was... the Queen of Sheba, when he went back to Sheba, he took with him the understanding of temples, because his dad, Solomon, knew what the temples were all about, and he took a mimic of it back, and now we have the Lemba people in South Africa have a mock-up of the Ark of the Covenant sitting there in South Africa. They're also descendants directly through their DNA. We've taken their DNA and studied. They're direct descendants of the House of David. And it's my opinion that they were also the authors of the civilization of the Olmecas in South America or in Central America. And if that's the case, then it's going to explain a lot of the behavior of the Olmecas. But the Ark of the Covenant himself, you can tell where it went by listening to where it appeared and what timing it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Akhenaten had it, and that's probably where it was created. It was created in Armana, which is the city of his birth. It went down the Nile River, was taken to Athens, where Gathalus, his family was from. Gathalus was one of the mercenaries that fought alongside Moses in the Ethiopian Wars. And part of the booty from the ransacking Egypt, the gold, is still in the Macedonian Museum to this very day. And you can pay your quarter and go see it. And one of the amazing things that's there are medallions with the image of the Ark of the Covenant on it, and this is long before Jeremiah had it, you know. We know that it went to Macedonia, then it probably came back to Jerusalem. We know that Nebuchadnezzar probably had it. We know that Cyrus the Great had it, and he was in possession of the arts and craftsmen of Jerusalem in the bondage of the people from Jerusalem. And he let them go. He sent them home, and he sent the Ark of the Covenant with him. And he sent all the golden temple artifacts back with him. And you have to ask yourself the question, why would a foreign king, an enemy king, send you home with all your gold intact, and then pay for 10 years of infrastructure to help you get started again? And it definitely had something to do with the Ark of the Covenant. And we know the Ark of the Covenant went as far as Great Britain, and then it kind of disappears. We have some records about Jeremiah going into the Jeremiah was responsible for it. We have some records that he had a vision that he should go to the West and leave Great Britain and take the Ark of the Covenant with him. When he came back, he didn't have it with him. And then we come up with the Indian tribes, the Minoans, etc., who have on their war shields and their teepees pictures of an Ark of the Covenant. And that makes total sense when you say to yourself that maybe Moses' prediction that the Ark of the Covenant would be found in the valley of the crossroads of the three rivers, in the valley of the Blue Shroud, and at the feet of Mount Nebo. There's only one place in the world that matches that.
What a discovery that would be, Glenn. Huh?
The only place in the world is certainly not in the Sinai. It's in the Arkansas National Forest. And by the way, Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
The Ark Nation people, hid it somewhere. And I think they hid it in the Cave of the Treasures, which was the treasure room for the artifacts from Adam and Eve. And there are other things there that are being guarded by the Urim and Thummim. And you don't want to mess with that.
No.
If Cyrus sent it home, you're not Cyrus the king, and you don't want to be messing with that one, even if you are Harrison Ford.
Let's go to Las Vegas. Hey, Sybil, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Sybil.
Hi, Mr. Kimball, I've never heard you before, and I do hope you get better. The subject's very interesting. I'm trying to gather my thoughts on this question, so let me try to condense it because it's kind of deep. But,
all right, you got it.
Most of my life, I've been a positive, very happy person. And, you know, maybe you could call me bright, so to speak, you know, when you say somebody's bright. And I find that there's a very weird phenomena that happens to me, especially with women. You know, I can be going about just my everyday business and be happy, you know, even in a customer service situation. And I just get this weird, really negative energy where it's almost like they don't want me to be happy. They don't think I should be happy. And they want to make sure that I know that they don't want me to be happy and give me this negative energy. So basically my question to you is this, and I call them evil people because to me, I don't understand how you can interact with another human being that you haven't even given them a chance to, you know, show what type of person they are. And right away you're trying to change their mood by being nasty to them for no reason or, you know, some psychological games or whatever. So my question to you is, do you think that evil people, and I'm specifically referring to this type of person, do you think they make a conscious decision to do this? They're okay with it? It's a power trip or what? And also my other second question real quick would be, you know, I really am not a person who believes in ETs or anything, but I've been listening to Coast, and it does make you think about it. Would it be at all possible in any of your minds, or you, George, either, that there could be human beings walking on the earth that are actually evil entities disguised as human beings, that it's their sole job to try to, you know, turn positive people into negative people?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. That's always very, very possible. But it's kind of an evil planet, Glenn, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I've met a few of them. You have to catch them by trickery sometimes and for them to reveal who they really are. It's kind of humorous when you do catch one. He oftentimes just disappears. Have you ever had a guy that got a flat tire and he was out in the desert and some guy walks up and says, "Let me help you," and he fixes the tire.
And he's gone.
And they turn around and the guy's gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many times does that happen?
Those are great stories.
Millions of times. Yeah. Certainly happened to me. And do these people have intention to do these things? I don't know. Probably. I don't think that the beings that cross over that line are without intention. I think they have intention. And, you know, it's like the scriptures say that, you know, be kind to the angels, the kind of strangers who come to your house, you may be entertaining angels at the same time. That's totally possible too, and I've done that one once or twice. That's oftentimes unsettling.
Let's take a final call here. Francis in Los Angeles, it's your turn. Hi, Francis. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. What a pleasure to speak with Mr. Kimball. I've got so many questions to ask.
And we've only got time for one quick one.
Okay, you had mentioned about a friend of yours that could see things that you couldn't see, even though you were sitting on it. I have a son over in Las Vegas who's very interested in American archaeology. He can literally see through the ground. He can go anywhere, out in the middle of a cow pasture, and say, take care, or look here.
Wow.
And he comes up with artifacts.
That's an art.
Yes, it is. Can it be used somewhere?
I guess you could use that just about anywhere if you could do it and have that ability.
Yeah, human radar detector. If it were me, I'd just start my own business and use it to help me. I wouldn't try and convince somebody that I had the ability. I'd go out and do it.
And just use it.
There's a lot of things that I have the ability to do that I'm tired of trying to convince the world that I can do this. I go out and do it, and that has to do with, you know, the CDs and the two-minute segments. And I mean, you know, you finally come to the point in your life where you just say, I'm going to do it. And here I am in a very serious health situation. I could collapse and say, I'm done. You know, very easily just say, it's over. Good night. The party's over.
I don't see you ever doing that, Glenn.
But you can't. I can't, because no. There's too much left to do. And I figure that if I keep a running start at it, that maybe it'll last a little longer.
I'm going to have a friend of mine, by the way, he's a regular guest named Christian Wild, contact you. So just get ready for his phone call and listen to what he has to say, okay?
All righty.
All right, Glenn. Thank you so much. Glenn Kimball, and what a remarkable individual. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to have Christian Wild get a hold of him. Christian knows some doctors who are, as you well know, experimenting with stem cells. Also now, I believe, in the liver. They've been doing it in the heart, and they're trying the spinal cord. And the liver is one heck of an organ to regenerate itself. Hey, it can't hurt. We'll see what happens. I'll be back in a moment with Joshua P. Warren's Paranormal Moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.